They're supposed to be heated up, he argues.
I actually agree with Luke, Jess says. Pop-Tarts are 10 times better heated up. I move my shoulder so her head isn't resting on it. We can't be friends anymore. Her mouth drops open and she pouts. Fine. Fine, I say, and she rests her head on my shoulder with a wide grin. Total weirdo. I don't know how she'll survive without my shoulder when she graduates in a few months. Anyone who heats up a Pop-Tart should be charged, Haley says. And imprisoned, I say.
And forced to eat uncooked Pop-Tarts until they accept how good they are, Maya adds.
It is law, Haley finishes, smacking the table like that settles it.
You guys have issues, Luke says, hopping off the table.
He picks at Haley's hair.
I think all that dye seeped into your brain.
She swats at him as he leaves. She's added blue streaks to her honey blonde hair and cut it shoulder length. In 5th grade, she trimmed it with some scissors during a math test because she felt like it. That was the moment I knew she didn't give a shit. I like the blue hails, I say, and the cut.
Yeah, Maya grins. It's very Joe Jonas of you.
Haley whips her head around so fast, her eyes flashing. Maya and I snicker. So there's a video deep in the depths of YouTube of the three of us lip-syncing to the Jonas Brothers and pretending to play guitars and drums in Haley's bedroom. She decided she was Joe, I was Nick, and Maya was Kevin. I really wanted to be Joe. I secretly loved him the most. But Haley said she should have him. So I let her. I let her have her way a lot. Still do. That's part of being Williamson's star, I guess.
I so have to find that video, Jess says.
No!
Haley goes, sliding off the tabletop.
It must never be found.
She sits across from us.
Never! Never! If I remembered that account's password, I'd delete it.
Oh, what was the account's name?
Jess asks. Joe Bro Lover or something? Wait, no. Joe Bro Lover. Everybody liked to misspell shit in middle school. I smirk and mumble. Close. Haley looks at me.
Star!
Maya and Britt crack up. It's moments like this that I feel normal at Williamson. Despite the guidelines I put on myself, I've still found my group, my table.
Okay, then, Haley says. I see how it is, Maya Jonas and Nick's Starry Girl 2000. So Hales, I say,
before she can finish my old screen name. She grins. How was your spring break? Haley loses her grin and rolls her eyes.
Oh, it was wonderful. Dad and stepmother Dearest dragged me and Remy to the house in the Bahamas for family bonding.
And bam, that normal feeling gone. I suddenly remember how different I am from most of the kids here. Nobody would have to drag me or my brothers to the Bahamas. We'd swim there if we could. For us, a family vacation is staying at a local hotel with a swimming pool for a weekend.
Sounds like my parents, says Britt. Took us to fucking Harry Potter World for the 3rd year in a row. I'm sick of butter beer and corny family photos with wands.
Holy shit. Who the fuck complains about going to Harry Potter World? Or butter beer? Or wands.
I hope none of them ask about my spring break. They went to Taipei, the Bahamas, Harry Potter World. I stayed in the hood and saw a cop kill my friend.
I guess the Bahamas wasn't so bad, Haley says. They wanted us to do family stuff, but we ended up doing our own thing the entire time.
You mean you texted me the entire time? Maya says.
It was still my own thing. All day, every day, Maya adds, ignoring the time difference.
Whatever, Shorty. You know you like talking to me.
Oh, I say. That's cool. Really, though, it's not. Haley never texted me during spring break. She barely texts me at all lately. Maybe once a week now, and it used to be every day. Something's changed between us, and neither one of us acknowledges it. We're normal when we're at Williamson, like now. Beyond here, though, we're no longer best friends. Just, I don't know. Plus, she unfollowed my Tumblr. She has no clue that I know. I once posted a picture of Emmett Till, a 14-year-old black boy who was murdered for whistling at a white woman in 1955. His mutilated body didn't look human. Haley texted me immediately after, freaking out. I thought it was because she couldn't believe someone would do that to a kid. No, she couldn't believe I would reblog such an awful picture. Not long after that, she stopped liking and reblogging my other posts. I looked through my followers list. Aw, Hales was no longer following me. With me living 45 minutes away, Tumblr is supposed to be sacred ground where our friendship is cemented. Unfollowing me is the same as saying, I don't like you anymore. Maybe I'm being sensitive. Or maybe things have changed. Maybe I've changed. For now, I guess we'll keep pretending everything is fine. The first bell rings. On Mondays, AP English is first for me, Haley, and Maya. On the way, they get into this big discussion-turned-argument about NCAA brackets and the Final Four. Haley was born a Notre Dame fan. Maya hates them almost unhealthily. I stay out that discussion. The NBA is more my thing anyway. We turn down the hall, and Chris is standing in the doorway of our class, his hands stuffed in pockets and a pair of headphones draped around his neck. He looks straight at me and stretches his arm across the doorway. Haley glances from him to me, back and forth, back and forth. Did something happen with you guys? My pursed lips probably give me away. Yeah, sort of. That douche, Haley says, reminding me why we're friends. She doesn't need details. If someone hurts me in any way, they're automatically on her shit list. It started in fifth grade, 2 years before Maya came along. We were those crybaby kids who bust out crying at the smallest shit. Me, because of Natasha, and Haley, because she lost her mom to cancer. We rode the waves of grief together. That's why this weirdness between us doesn't make sense. What do you want to do, Star? She asks. I don't know. Before Khalil, I planned to cold shoulder Chris with a sting more powerful than a 90s R&B breakup song. But after Khalil, I'm more like a Taylor Swift song. No shade, I fucks with Tay-Tay, but she doesn't serve like 90s R&B on the angry girlfriend scale. I'm not happy with Chris, yet I miss him. I miss us. I need him so much that I'm willing to forget what he did. That's scary as fuck, too. Someone I've only been with for a year means that much to me? But Chris, he's different. You know what? I'll Beyonce him. Not as powerful as a 90s R&B breakup song, but stronger than a Taylor Swift. Yeah, that'll work. I tell Haley and Maya, I'll handle him. They move so I'm between them like they're my bodyguards, and we go to the door together. Chris bows to us. Ladies, move, Maya orders. Funny considering how much Chris towers over her. He looks at me with those baby blues. He got a tan over break. I used to tell him he was so pale he looked like a marshmallow. He hated that I compared him to food. I told him that's what he got for calling me caramel. It shut him up. Damn it, though. He's wearing the Space Jam 11s, too. I forgot we decided to wear them the first day back. They look good on him. Jordans are my weakness. Can't help it.
I just want to talk to my girl, he claims.
I don't know who that is, I say, Beyonce-ing him like a pro. He sighs through his nose.
Please, star, can we at least talk about it?
I'm back to Taylor Swift because the please does it. I nod at Haley and Maya.
You hurt her, and I'll kill you,
Haley warns, and she and Maya go into class without me. Chris and I move away from the door. I lean against a locker and fold my arms. I'm listening, I say. A bass-heavy instrumental plays in his headphones, probably one of his beats.
I'm sorry for what happened. I should have talked to you first.
I cock my head. We did talk about it. A week before, remember?
I know. I know, and I heard you. I just wanted to be prepared in case...
You could push the right buttons and convince me to change my mind?
No. His hands go up in surrender. Star, you know, I wouldn't... That's not... I'm sorry, okay? I took it too far.
Understatement. The day before Big D's party, Chris and I were in Chris's ridiculously large room. The third floor of his parents' mansion is a suite for him, a perk of being the last born to empty nesters. I try to forget that he has an entire floor as big as my house and hired help that looks like me. Fooling around isn't new for us, and when Chris slipped his hand in my shorts, I didn't think anything of it. Then he got me going, and I really wasn't thinking at all. For real, my thought process went out the door. And right as I was at that moment, he stopped, reached into his pocket, and pulled out a condom. He raised his eyebrows at me, silently asking for an invitation to go all the way. All I could think about was those girls I see walking around Garden Heights, babies propped on their hips. Condom or no condom, shit happens. I went off on Chris. He knew I wasn't ready for that. We already talked about it, and yet he had a condom? He said he wanted to be responsible, but if I said I'm not ready, I'm not ready. I left his house pissed and horny, the absolute worst way to leave. My mom may have been right, though. She once said that after you go there with a guy, it activates all these feelings and you want to do it all the time. Chris and I went far enough that I noticed every single detail about his body now. His cute nostrils that flare when he sighs. His soft brown hair that my fingers love to explore. His gentle lips and his tongue that wets them every so often, the five freckles on his neck that are in the perfect spots for kissing. More than that, I remember the guy who spends almost every night on the phone with me, talking about nothing and everything. The one who loves to make me smile. Yeah, he pisses me off sometimes, and I'm sure I piss him off. But we mean something. We actually mean a lot. Fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck. I'm crumbling. Chris, he goes for a low blow and beatboxes an all too familiar.
Boom, 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 boom.
I point at him. Don't you dare.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
He beatboxes the instrumental and pops his chest and booty to the rhythm. People pass by us laughing. A guy whistles suggestively. Someone shouts, "Shake that ass, Bryant!" My smile grows before I can stop it. The Fresh Prince isn't just my show. It's our show. Sophomore year, he followed my Tumblr and I followed him back. We knew of each other from school, but we didn't know each other. One Saturday, I reblogged a bunch of Fresh Prince gifts and clips. He liked and reblogged every single one. That Monday morning in the cafeteria, he paid for my Pop-Tarts and grape juice and said, "The first Aunt Viv was the best Aunt Viv." It was the beginning of us. Chris gets the Fresh Prince, which helps him get me. We once talked about how cool it was that Will remained himself in his new world. I slipped up and said I wish I could be like that at school. Chris said, "Why can't you, Fresh Princess?" Ever since, I don't have to decide which star I have to be with him. He likes both. Well, the parts I've shown him. Some things I can't reveal, like Natasha. Once you've seen how broken someone is, it's like seeing them naked. You can't look at them the same anymore. I like the way he looks at me now, as if I'm one of the best things in his life. He's one of the best things in mine, too. I can't lie. We get the why-is-he-dating-her stare that usually comes from rich white girls. Sometimes I wonder the same thing. Chris acts like those looks don't exist. When he does stuff like this, rapping and beatboxing in the middle of a busy hall just to make me smile, I forget about those looks, too. He starts the second verse, swaying his shoulders and looking at me. The worst part? His silly butt knows it's working. "In West Philadelphia, born and raised. Come on, babe, join in." He grabs my hands. 115 follows Khalil's hands with the flashlight. He orders Khalil to get out with his hands up. He barks at me to put my hands on the dashboard. I kneel beside my dead friend in the middle of the street with my hands raised. A cop, as white as Chris, points a gun at me. As white as Chris. I flinch and snatch away. Chris frowns. "Star? You okay?" Khalil opens the door. "You okay, Star?" Pow! There's blood. Too much blood. The second bell rings, jolting me back to normal Williamson, where I'm not normal Star. Chris leans down, his face in front of mine. My tears blur him. "Star?" It's a few tears, yeah. But I feel exposed. I turn to go to class, and Chris grabs my arm. I yank away and whirl on him. His hands go up in surrender. "Sorry, I was..." I wipe my eyes and walk into the classroom. Chris is right behind me. Haley and Maya shoot him the dirtiest looks. I lower myself into the desk in front of Haley. She squeezes my shoulder. "That jackwad." Nobody mentions Khalil at school today. I hate to admit it because it's like throwing him the middle finger, but I'm relieved. Since basketball season is over, I leave when everybody else does. Probably for the first time in my life, I wish it wasn't the end of the day. I'm that much closer to talking to the cops. Haley and I trek across the parking lot arm in arm. Maya has a driver to pick her up. Haley has her own car, and I have a brother with a car. The two of us always end up walking out together. "Are you absolutely sure you don't want me to kick Chris's ass?" Haley asks. I told her and Maya about Condomgate, and as far as they're concerned, Chris is eternally banished to asshole land. "Yes," I say for the 100th time, "you're violent, Hales." "When it comes to my friends, possibly. Seriously, though, why would he even? God, boys and their fucking sex drive." I snort. "Is that why you and Luke haven't gotten together?" She lightly elbows me. "Shut up." I laugh. "Why won't you admit you like him?" "What makes you think I like him?" "Really, Haley?" "Whatever, Star. This isn't about me. This is about you and your sex-driven boyfriend." "He's not sex-driven." I say.
Then what do you call it?
He was horny at that moment.
Same thing!
I try to keep a straight face, and she does too, but soon we're cracking up. God, it feels good to be normal Star and Haley. Has me wondering if I imagined a change.
We part at the halfway point to Haley's car and Seven's. The ass-kicking offer is still on the table, she calls to me. Bye, Haley.
I walk off, rubbing my arms. Spring has decided to go through an identity crisis and get chilly on me. A few feet away, Seven keeps a hand on his car as he talks to his girlfriend, Layla. Him and that damn Mustang. He touches it more than he touches Layla. She obviously doesn't care. She plays with the dreadlock near his face that isn't pulled into his ponytail. Eye roll worthy. Some girls do too much. Can't she play with all them curls on her own head? Honestly, though, I don't have a problem with Layla. She's a geek like Seven, smart enough for Harvard, but Howard bound, and real sweet. She's one of the four black girls in the senior class, and if Seven just wants to date black girls, he picked a great one. I walk up to them and go, "Hem, hem!" Seven keeps his eyes on Layla. Go sign Sakani out.
Can't, I lie. Mama didn't put me on the list.
Yes, she did. Go.
I fold my arms. I am not walking halfway across campus to get him and halfway back. We can get him when we're leaving. He side-eyes me. But I'm too tired for all that, and it's cold. Seven kisses Layla and goes around to the driver's side.
Acting like that's a long walk, he mumbles.
Acting like we can't get him when we're leaving, I say, and hop in.
He starts the car, this nice mix Chris made of Kanye and my other future husband, J. Cole, plays from Seven's iPod dock. He maneuvers through the parking lot traffic to Sakani's school. Seven signs him out of his after-school program, and we leave.
I'm hungry, Sakani whines, not even 5 minutes out the parking lot.
Didn't they give you a snack in after school?
Seven asks.
So? I'm still hungry.
Greedy butt, Seven says, and Sakani kicks the back of his seat.
Seven laughs.
Okay, okay. Ma asked me to bring some food to the clinic anyway. I'll get you something, too.
He looks at Sakani in the rearview mirror.
Is that cool?
Seven freezes. He turns Chris's mix off and slows down.
What you turn the music off for? Sakani asks.
Shut up.
Seven hisses. We stop at a red light. A Riverton Hills patrol car pulls up beside us. Seven straightens up and stares ahead, barely blinking and gripping the steering wheel. His eyes move a little like he wants to look at the cop car. He swallows hard.
Come on, light, he prays. Come on.
I stare ahead and pray for the light to change, too. It finally turns green, and Seven lets the patrol car go first. His shoulders don't relax until we get on the freeway. Mine neither. We stop at this Chinese restaurant Mama loves and get food for all of us. She wants me to eat before I talk to the detectives. In Garden Heights, kids play in the streets. Sakani presses his face against my window and watches them. He won't play with them, though. Last time he played with some neighborhood kids, they called him White Boy, 'cause he goes to Williamson. Black Jesus greets us from a mural on the side of the clinic. He has locks, like Seven. His arms stretch the width of the wall, and there are puffy white clouds behind him. Big letters above him remind us that Jesus loves you. Seven passes Black Jesus and goes into the parking lot behind the clinic. He punches in a code to open the gate and parks next to Mama's Camry. I get the tray of sodas, Seven gets the food, and Sakani doesn't take anything because he never takes anything. I hit the buzzer for the back door and wave up at the camera. The door opens into a sterile-smelling hall with bright white walls and white tile floors that reflect us. The hall takes us to the waiting room. A handful of people watch the news on the old box TV in the ceiling or read magazines that have been there since I was little. When this shaggy-haired man sees that we have food, he straightens up and sniffs hard, as if it's for him.
"What y'all bringing up in here?"
Miss Felicia asks at the front desk, stretching her neck to see. Mama comes from the other hallway in her plain yellow scrubs, following a teary-eyed boy and his mom. The boy sucks on a lollipop, a reward for surviving a shot.
"There go my babies,"
Mama says when she sees us.
"And they got my food, too. Come on, let's go in the back."
"Save me some,"
Miss Felicia calls after us. Mama tells her to hush. We set the food out on the break room table. Mama gets some paper plates and plastic utensils that she keeps in a cabinet for days like this. We say grace and dig in. Mama sits on the countertop and eats.
This is hitting the spot. Thank you, Seven Baby. I only had a bag of Cheetos today.
You didn't have lunch?
Sikani asks, with a mouth full of fried rice. Mama points her fork at him.
What did I tell you about talking with your mouth full?
And for your information, no, I did not. I had a meeting on my lunch break. Now tell me about y'all. How was school? Sikani always talks the longest because he gives every single detail. Seven says his day was fine. I'm as short with my, it was all right. Mama sips her soda.
Anything happen?
I freaked out when my boyfriend touched me, but
nope, nothing.
Miss Felicia comes to the door.
Lisa, sorry to bother you, but we have an issue up front.
I'm on break, Felicia.
Don't you think I know that?
But she asking for you.
It's Brenda.
Khalil's mama. My mom sets her plate down. She looks straight at me when she says, "Stay here." I'm hard-headed, though. I follow her to the waiting room. Miss Brenda sits with her face in her hands. Her hair is uncombed and her white shirt is dingy, almost brown. She has sores and scabs on her arms and legs, and since she's real light-skinned, they show up even more. Mama kneels in front of her.
"Bryn, hey."
Miss Brenda moves her hands. Her red eyes remind me of what Khalil said when we were little, that his mama had turned into a dragon. He claimed that one day he'd become a knight and turn her back. It doesn't make sense that he sold drugs. I would have thought his broken heart wouldn't let him.
"My baby,"
his mama cries.
"Lisa, my baby."
Mama sandwiches Miss Brenda's hands between hers and rubs them, not caring that they're nasty looking.
"I know, Bryn.
They killed my baby."
"I know."
"They killed him."
"I know."
"Lord Jesus,"
Miss Felicia says from the doorway. Next to her, Seven puts his arm around Sikani. Some patients in the waiting room shake their heads.
"But Bryn, you gotta get cleaned up,"
Mama says.
That's what he wanted.
"I can't. My baby ain't here."
"Yes, you can. You have Cameron, and he needs you. Your mama needs you."
"Khalil needed you, I want to say. He waited for you and cried for you. But where were you? You don't get to cry now. Nuh-uh. It's too late." But she keeps crying. Rocking and crying. "Tammy and I can get you some help, Bryn," Mama says. "But you gotta really want it this time."
"I don't want to live like this no more."
"I know." Mama waves Miss Felicia over and hands Miss Felicia her phone. Look through my contacts and find Tammy Harris's number. Call and tell her that her sister is here. Bryn, when was the last time you ate?
I don't know. I don't... My baby.
Mama straightens up and rubs Miss Brenda's shoulder. I'm going to get you some food. I follow Mama back. She walks kind of fast but passes the food and goes to the counter. She leans on it with her back to me and bows her head, not saying a word. Everything I wanted to say in the waiting room comes bubbling out. How come she gets to be upset? She wasn't there for Khalil. You know how many times he cried about her? Birthdays, Christmas, all that. Why does she get to cry now? Star, please. She hasn't acted like a mom to him. Now all of a sudden, he's her baby. It's bullshit. Mama smacks the counter and I jump. Shut up! She screams. She turns around, tears streaking her face. That wasn't some little friend of hers. That was her son. You hear me? Her son. Her voice cracks. She carried that boy, birthed that boy, and you have no right to judge her. I have cotton mouth. Mama closes her eyes. She massages her forehead. I'm sorry. Fix her a plate, baby, okay? Fix her a plate. I do, and put a little extra of everything on it. I take it to Miss Brenda. She mumbles what sounds like thank you as she takes it. When she looks at me through the red haze, Khalil's eyes stare back at me, and I realize my mom's right. Miss Brenda is Khalil's mama. Regardless. 6. My mom and I arrive at the police station at 4:30 on the dot. A handful of cops talk on phones, type on computers, or stand around. Normal stuff like on Law and Order, but my breath catches. I count. 1, 2, 3, 4. I lose count around 12. Because the guns in their holsters are all I can see. All of them, 2 of us. Mama squeezes my hand. Breathe. I didn't realize I had grabbed hers. I take a deep breath and another, and she nods with each one, saying, "That's it. You're okay. We're okay." Uncle Carlos comes over, and he and Mama lead me to his desk, where I sit down. I feel eyes on me from all around. The grip tightens around my lungs. Uncle Carlos hands me a sweating bottle of water. Mama puts it up to my lips. I take slow sips and look around Uncle Carlos's desk to avoid the curious eyes of the officers. He has almost as many pictures of me and Sekani on display as he has of his own kids. I'm taking her home. Mama tells him, I'm not putting her through this today. She's not ready. I understand, but she has to talk to them at some point, Lisa. She's a vital part of this investigation. Mama sighs. Carlos, I get it, he says, in a noticeably lower voice. Believe me, I do. Unfortunately, if we want this investigation done right, she has to talk to them. If not today, then another day. Another day of waiting and wondering what's going to happen. I can't go through that. I want to do it today, I mumble. I want to get it over with. They look at me like they just remembered I'm here. Uncle Carlos kneels in front of me. Are you sure, baby girl? I nod before I lose my nerve. All right. Mama says, but I'm going with her. That's totally fine, Uncle Carlos says. I don't care if it's not fine, she looks at me. She's not doing this alone. Those words feel as good as any hug I've ever gotten. Uncle Carlos keeps an arm around me and leads us to a small room that has nothing in it but a table and some chairs. An unseen air conditioner hums loudly, blasting freezing air into the room.
All right, Uncle Carlos says. I'll be outside, okay?
Okay, I say. He kisses my forehead with his usual two pecks. Mama takes my hand, and her tight squeeze tells me what she doesn't say out loud. I got your back. We sit at the table. She's still holding my hand when the two detectives come in. A young white guy with slick black hair, and a Latina with lines around her mouth and a spiky haircut. Both of them wear guns on their waists. Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to.
Hi, Star and Mrs. Carter, the woman says, holding out her hand. I'm Detective Gomez, and this is my partner, Detective Wilkes.
I let go of my mom's hand to shake the detective's hands. Hello? My voice is changing already. It always happens around other people, whether I'm at Williamson or not. I don't talk like me or sound like me. I choose every word carefully and make sure I pronounce them well. I can never, ever let anyone think I'm ghetto.
It's so nice to meet you both,
Wilkes says. Considering the circumstances, I wouldn't call it nice, says Mama. Wilkes' face and neck get extremely red.
What he means is we've heard so much about you both, Gomez says. Carlos always gushes about his wonderful family. We feel like we know you already.
She's laying it on extra thick. Please, have a seat. Gomez points to a chair, and she and Wilkes sit across from us.
Just so you know, you're being recorded, but it's simply so we can have Star's statement on record.
Okay, I say. There it is again. All perky and shit. I'm never perky. Detective Gomez gives the date and time and the names of the people in the room and reminds us that we're being recorded. Wilkes scribbles in his notebook. Mama rubs my back. For a moment, there's only the sound of pencil on paper. All right, then. Gomez adjusts herself in her chair and smiles, the lines around her mouth deepening.
Don't be nervous, Star. You haven't done anything wrong. We just want to know what happened.
I know I haven't done anything wrong, I think, but it comes out as, yes, ma'am.
You're 16, right?
Yes, ma'am.
How long did you know Khalil?
Since I was 3. His grandmother used to babysit me.
Wow, she says, all teacher-like, stretching out the word, that's a long time. Can you tell us what happened the night of the incident?
You mean the night he was killed?
Shit.
Gomez's smile dims. The lines around her mouth aren't as deep, but she says,
the night of the incident, yes. Start where you feel comfortable.
I look at Mama. She nods. My friend Kenya and I went to a house party hosted by a guy named Darius, I say.
Thump, 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 I drum the table.
Stop. No sudden moves. I lay my hands flat to keep them visible. He has one every spring break, I say. Khalil saw me, came over, and said hello.
Do you know why he was at the party? Gomez asks.
Why does anybody go to a party? To party? I assume it was for recreational purposes, I say. He and I talked about things going on in our lives.
What kind of things? She questions.
His grandmother has cancer. I didn't know until he told me that evening.
I see, Gomez says. What happened after that?
A fight occurred at the party,
so we left together in his car. Khalil didn't have anything to do with the fight? I raise an eyebrow. Nah. Damn it. Proper English. I sit up straight. I mean, no, ma'am. We were talking when the fight occurred. Okay, so you two left. Where were you going? He offered to take me home or to my father's grocery store. Before we could decide, 115 pulled us over. Who? She asks. The officer. That's his badge number, I say. I remember it. Wilkes scribbles. I see, Gomez says. Can you describe what happened next? I don't think I'll ever forget what happened. But saying it out loud, that's different. And hard. My eyes prickle. I blink, staring at the table. Mama rubs my back. Look up, Star. My parents have this thing where they never want me or my brothers to talk to somebody without looking them in their eyes. They claim that a person's eyes say more than their mouth and that it goes both ways. If we look someone in their eyes and mean what we say, they should have little reason to doubt us. I look at Gomez. Khalil pulled over to the side of the road and turned the ignition off, I say. 115 put his brights on. He approached the window and asked Khalil for his license and registration. Did Khalil comply? Gomez asks. He asked the officer why he pulled us over first. Then he showed his license and registration. Did Khalil seem irate during this exchange? Annoyed, not irate, I say. He felt that the cop was harassing him. Did he tell you this? No, but I could tell. I assumed the same thing myself. Shit. Gomez scoots closer. Maroon lipstick stains her teeth, and her breath smells like coffee. And why was that? Breathe. The room isn't hot. You're nervous. Because we weren't doing anything wrong, I say. Khalil wasn't speeding or driving recklessly. It didn't seem like he had a reason to pull us over. I see. What happened next? The officer forced Khalil out the car. Forced? She says. Yes, ma'am. He pulled him out. Because Khalil was hesitant, right? Mama makes this throaty sound. Like she was about to say something but stopped herself. She purses her lips and rubs my back in circles. I remember what Daddy said. Don't let them put words in your mouth. No, ma'am, I say to Gomez. He was getting out on his own, and the officer yanked him the rest of the way. She says, I see again. But she didn't see it, so she probably doesn't believe it. What happened next? She asks. The officer patted Khalil down 3 times. 3? Yeah, I counted. Yes, ma'am. He didn't find anything. He then told Khalil to stay put while he ran his license and registration. But Khalil didn't stay put, did he? She says. He didn't pull the trigger on himself either. Shit, your fucking big mouth. The detectives glance at each other. A moment of silent conversation. The walls move in closer. The grip around my lungs returns. I pull my shirt away from my neck. I think we're done for today, Mama says, taking my hand as she starts to stand up. But Mrs. Carter, we're not finished. I don't care. Mom, I say, and she looks down at me. It's okay. I can do this. She gives them a glare similar to the one she gives me and my brothers when we've pushed her to her limit. She sits down, but holds on to my hand. Okay, Gomez says. So he patted Khalil down, and told him he would check his license and registration. What next?
Khalil opened the driver's side door and...
Pow! Pow! Pow!
Blood. Tears crawled down my cheeks. I wiped them on my arm. The officer shot him.
Do you... Gomez starts, but Mama holds a finger toward her. Could you please give her a second? She says.
It sounds more like an order than a question. Gomez doesn't say anything.
Wilkes scribbles some more. My mom wipes some of my tears for me.
Whenever you're ready, she says.
I swallow the lump in my throat and nod.
Okay, Gomez says, and takes a deep breath.
Do you know why Khalil came to the door, Star?
I think he was coming to ask if I was okay.
You think?
I'm not a telepath. Yes, ma'am. He started asking, but didn't finish because the officer shot him in the back.
More salty tears fall on my lips. Gomez leans across the table. We all want to get to the bottom of this, Star. We appreciate your cooperation. I understand this is hard right now.
I wipe my face on my arm again.
Yeah. Yeah.
She smiles and says in that same sugary, sympathetic tone, Now... Do you know if Khalil sold narcotics?
Pause.
What the fuck?
My tears stop. For real, my eyes get dry with the quickness. Before I can say anything, my mom goes, What does that have to do with anything?
It's only a question, Gomez says. Do you, Star?
All the sympathy, the smiles, the understanding. This chick was baiting me. Investigating or justifying? I know the answer to her question. I knew it when I saw Khalil at the party. He never wore new shoes. And jewelry? Those little 99-cent chains he bought at the beauty supply store didn't count. Miss Rosalie just confirmed it. But what the hell does that have to do with him getting murdered? Is that supposed to make all of this okay?
Gomez tilts her head.
Star, can you please answer the question?
I refuse to make them feel better about killing my friend.
I straighten up, look Gomez dead in her eyes, and say, I never saw him sell drugs or do drugs.
But do you know if he sold them? She asks.
He never told me he did, I say. Which is true. Khalil never flat out admitted it to me.
Do you have knowledge of him selling them?
I heard things.
Also true.
She sighs.
I see.
Do you know if he was involved with the King Lords?
No.
The Garden Disciples?
No.
Did you consume any alcohol at the party? She asks.
I know that move from Law and Order. She's trying to discredit me.
No, I don't drink.
Did Khalil?
Well, wait one second, Mama says. Are y'all putting Khalil and Star on trial? Or the cop who killed him?
Wilkes looks up from his notes.
I don't quite understand, Mrs. Carter.
Gomez sputters.
You haven't asked my child about that cop yet. Mama says, you keep asking her about Khalil, like he's the reason he's dead. Like she said, he didn't pull the trigger on himself.
We just want the whole picture, Mrs. Carter. That's all.
115 killed him, I say, and he wasn't doing anything wrong. How much of a bigger picture do you need?
15 minutes later, I leave the police station with my mom. Both of us know the same thing. This is going to be some bullshit. 7. Khalil's funeral is Friday, tomorrow. Exactly 1 week since he died. I'm at school, trying not to think about what he'll look like in the coffin. How many people will be there? What he'll look like in the coffin? If other people will know I was with him when he died. What he'll look like in the coffin. I'm failing at not thinking about it. On the Monday night news, they finally gave Khalil's name in the story about the shooting, but with a title added to it. Khalil Harris, a suspected drug dealer. They didn't mention that he was unarmed. They said that an unidentified witness had been questioned and that the police were still investigating. After what I told the cops, I'm not sure what's left to investigate. In the gym, everyone's changed into their blue shorts and gold Williamson t-shirts, but class hasn't started yet. To pass time, some of the girls challenged some of the boys to a basketball game. They're playing on one end of the gym, the floor squeaking as they run around. The girls are all, "Stop!" when the guys guard them, flirting, Williamson style. Haley, Maya, and I are in the bleachers on the other end. On the floor, some guys are supposedly dancing, trying to get their moves ready for prom. I say supposedly because there's no way that shit can be called dancing. Maya's boyfriend, Ryan, is the only one even close, and he's just doing the dab. It's his go-to move. He's a big, wide-shouldered linebacker, and it looks a little funny, but that's an advantage of being the sole black guy in class. You can look silly and still be cool. Chris is on the bottom bleacher, playing one of his mixes on his phone for them to dance to. He glances over his shoulder at me. I have two bodyguards who won't allow him near me. Maya on one side, cheering Ryan on, and Haley, who's laughing her ass off at Luke and recording him. They're still pissed at Chris. I'm honestly not. He made a mistake, and I forgive him. The Fresh Prince theme and his willingness to embarrass himself helped with that. But that moment he grabbed my hands and I flashed back to that night, it's like I suddenly really, really realized that Chris is white, just like 115. And I know I'm sitting here next to my white best friend, but it's almost as if I'm giving Khalil, Daddy, Seven, and every other black guy in my life a big, loud, fuck you, by having a white boyfriend. Chris didn't pull us over. He didn't shoot Khalil. But am I betraying who I am by dating him? I need to figure this out. Oh, my God, that's sickening, says Haley. She stopped recording to watch the basketball game. They're not even trying. They're really not. The ball sails past the hoop from an attempted shot by Bridget Holloway. Either homegirl's hand-eye coordination is way off, or she missed that on purpose, because now Jackson Reynolds is showing her how to shoot. Basically, he's all up on her, and shirtless. I don't know what's worse, Haley says. The fact that they're going soft on them because they're girls, or that the girls are letting them go soft on them. Equality in basketball, right, Hales? Maya says with a wink. Yes. Wait. She eyes Maya suspiciously. Are you making fun of me, or are you serious, Shorty? Both, I say, leaning back on my elbows, my belly pooching out my shirt, a food baby. We just left lunch, and the cafeteria had fried chicken. One of the foods Williamson gets right. It's not even a real game, Hales, I tell her. Nope, Maya pats my stomach. When are you due? Same day as you. Aw, we can raise our food offspring as siblings. I know, right? I'm naming mine Fernando, I say. Why Fernando? Maya asks. Dunno. It sounds like a food baby name, especially when you roll the R. I can't roll my R's. She tries, but she makes some weird noise, spit flying, and I'm cracking up. Haley points at the game.
Look at that! It's that whole play-like-a-girl mindset that male gender uses to belittle women when we have as much athleticism as they do.
Oh, my Lord. She's seriously upset over this.
Take the ball to the hole!
She hollers to the girls. Maya catches my eye, hers glimmering sneakily, and it's middle school deja vu.
And don't be afraid to shoot the outside, Jay!
Maya shouts.
Just keep your head in the game, I say. Just keep your head in the game.
And don't be afraid to shoot the outside, Jay,
Maya sings.
Just get your head in the game, I sing.
We bust out with Get Your Head in the Game from High School Musical. It'll be stuck in my head for days. We were obsessed with the movies around the same time as our Jonas Brothers obsession. Disney took all our parents' money. We're loud with it now. Haley's trying to glare at us. She snorts.
Come on!
She gets up and pulls me and Maya up, too.
Get your head in this game.
I'm thinking, oh, so you can drag me to play basketball during one of your feminist rages? But you can't follow my Tumblr because of Emmett Till? I don't know why I can't make myself bring it up. It's Tumblr. But then, it's Tumblr.
Hey! Haley says. We want to play.
No, we don't, Maya mutters. Haley nudges her. I don't want to play either. But for some reason, Haley makes decisions and Maya and I follow along. It's not like we planned it to be this way. Sometimes the shit just happens and one day you realize there's a leader among you and your friends. And it's not you.
Come on in, ladies.
Jackson beckons us into the game.
There's always room for pretty girls. We'll try not to hurt you.
Haley looks at me. I look at her. And we have the same deadpan expression that we've had mastered since fifth grade. Mouths slightly open, eyes ready to roll at any moment.
All righty then, I say. Let's play.
Three on three, Haley says as we take our positions. Girls versus boys, half court, first to 20. Sorry, ladies, but me and my girls are going to handle this one, okay? Bridget gives Haley some serious stank eye. She and her friends move to the sideline. The dance party stops, and those guys come over, Chris included. He whispers something to Tyler, one of the boys who played in the previous game. Chris takes Tyler's place on the court. Jackson checks the ball to Haley. I run around my guard, Garrett, and Haley passes to me. No matter what's going on when Haley, Maya, and I play together, it's rhythm, chemistry, and skill rolled into a ball of amazingness. Garrett's guarding me, but Chris runs up and elbows him aside. Garrett goes,
"The hell, Bryant?"
"I've got her," Chris says.
He gets in his defensive stance. We're eye to eye as I dribble the ball.
"Hey,"
he says. "Hey." I do a chest pass to Maya, who's wide open for a jump shot. She makes it. 2-0.
"Good job, Yang,"
says Coach Myers. She's come out her office. All it takes is a hint of a real game, and she's in coaching mode. She reminds me of a fitness trainer on a reality TV show. She's petite, yet muscular, and God, that woman can yell. Garrett's at the baseline with the ball. Chris runs to get open. Stomach full, I have to push harder to stay on him. We're hip to hip, watching Garrett try to decide who to pass to. Our arms brush, and something in me is activated. My senses are suddenly consumed by Chris. His legs look so good in his gym shorts. He's wearing Old Spice, and even just from that little brush, his skin feels so soft.
"I miss you," he says.
No point in lying. "I miss you, too." The ball sails his way. Chris catches it. Now I'm in my defensive stance, and we're eye to eye again as he dribbles. My gaze lowers to his lips. They're a little wet, and begging me to kiss them. See, this is why I can never